All right, we're back with part B of the lecture on chapter 13. And we were talking about the cartel and the division of output between the two firms or countries. Now, one of the things that you often find in cartel arrangements is that the firms say, okay, fine, we'll produce those quantities that have been assigned, and then they go out and really produce more. And there's an incentive to do it. If they think that the price will be maintained at the agreed on level, if they cheat on the agreement and produce more, they can substantially increase their profits. And this has been the history of many cartels, is that the cartel has collapsed due to cheating. And indeed, the OPEC cartel, there's plenty of evidence that following the agreements that some, maybe even all of those countries, cheat on the agreement by producing more than they agreed to. And what happens then is that the supply is higher, the quantity supplied is greater than was planned, and the price can't be maintained. Now, as we look at the price of gas today, in September of 2005, at almost $3 a gallon, you'd think, boy, that cartel is doing a great job. But the history has been that there's cheating, and the price of oil and the price of gas is quite volatile. And I may have said this before, my prediction is that the price of gas will fall considerably from its current level in Logan of about $2.85 to $2.90 a gallon. And as you listen to this, it may be, you know, some months, I don't know, perhaps even years later, and you can see if my predictions are of any value. Now, in the oligopoly analyses, there are various oligopoly models, and the book describes several of these, including the Bertrand oligopoly and the Sweezy model and the Cournot model and the Stackelberg model. And we don't really have time to go over those, and I know that it's not easy material, but I'm going to leave that to your study and just shift down to some measurement issues in measuring how concentrated or a market is, which is an indication of how competitive conditions are in that market. And if you click on slide 24, and the first measure discussed there is the concentration ratio. And you'll notice it has an equation there, CR sub I is equal to summation XI, where XI is the market share of the ith leading firm. Now, for example, if there are 10 firms in the industry, and the largest four firms account for 50% of the market, we'd say that the four firm concentration ratio is 50. Or we might talk about the 10-firm concentration ratio. Conventionally, the 4-firm and 8-firm, 20-firm ratios are often discussed. And if you would open your book to page 448 in table 13.2, there is a list of about 20 industries, and then it shows the concentration ratio for 4 firms, 8 firms, etc., for each of those industries. And you'll notice that one of the most concentrated industries is breakfast cereal. The top 4 firms sell almost 83% of the breakfast cereal, which may explain why the price of Cheerios is as high as it is. It's not the most competitive industry. You'll notice that if you get down to jewelry and silverware, the top 4 firms only sell 11% of the output. We would expect that to be a much more competitive industry and to have lower profits than lower profits per dollar invested in any event than, say, in the breakfast cereal industry. Now, the other index shown is the Herfindahl-Hirschman Index. And that's a mouthful. It's generally, I think, called the Herfindahl Index. But anyway, this is what you do is you take the market share of each firm and you square that and add it together. For example, let's say there were four, that the largest four firms, well, let's say there were four firms in the industry, and they each had 25% of the market share. All right, we would take 25 and we would square that, and we have four firms. We would add that up for the four firms, and we would get 2,500, and that would be the Herfindahl Index. Now, for example, if you had a monopoly and only one firm, that firm would have 100% of the market. If you square 100, you get 10,000. And that is the upper bound to the Herfindahl Index. That's as high as it can get, and of course indicates an industry with no competition. In contrast, if you had a perfectly competitive industry where each firm had a minuscule share of the market, say they each had 0.01%, and you squared that, you would get 0.0001. And if you added that up for all of the firms, you might get a Herfindahl Index that was 1 or even 0.5. The more firms there are, the lower the Herfindahl Index, and it could approach zero. If you had a million firms, each having 1 million to the market, and you squared 1 millionth and added it up, you'd have something that was about zero. So that range of 0 to 10,000 is the range for the Herfindahl Index. And the lower the number, the more competitive the industry. And of course, the higher the number, the less competitive is the industry. And so as you read the newspaper and continue your study in business and economics, you'll run across these measures. And it's a good idea to get them, you know, back in the back of your mind in that framework that we were talking about, so that when you see someone talk about the four firm concentration ratio or the 10 firm concentration ratio or the Herfindahl Index, you'll know what they're talking about. And if they say that the four firm concentration ratio is 50 or 80 or whatever it is, you'll have some sense of whether that's big or small. Well, that concludes our lecture for Chapter 13, and we'll look forward to talking to you on our next lecture, which would be, I believe it's Chapter 14. Let me double check that. It is. All right.